At the heart of the formation for our clergy has been reviewing much of material that we are familiar with, but also things that we're not familiar with, particularly canon law, and looking at things like ecclesiology and the sacraments, not simply from the point of view of the early fathers and the scriptures, but also from papal documents, which will be unfamiliar to some. So there's a whole new way of looking at things. And I think our clergy have found it very exciting, although hard work, because they are doing the formation now, which continues for 2 years, while they're also ministering to their groups and also in other forms of ministry, because many of them are chaplains or perhaps have the care of a local diocesan congregation as well as an ordinary congregation. So to balance that with also doing some studies is quite hard work for them, but they're doing their best.
You mentioned also the practical challenges, the financial question. You've started a group, haven't you, Friends of Our Lady of Walsingham,
yes,
to help with the financial situation.
Yeah.
How much of a problem is that long term, do you think?
Well, we're starting with almost nothing. I mean, the Catholic bishops very generously gave us £250,000. One or two charities have given us some money, but that amounted for the first year to about £500,000. But that won't continue. We have to be self-financing. So the groups are beginning to raise money and send it to the centre so that we can support the clergy who need support. But we need to have some sort of investments, I think, for the future. I mean, I'm particularly concerned about pension arrangements for those clergy who are younger. Those of us who are older will have taken our clergy pensions from the Church of England. We will receive them when we're 65. But if you're a priest of 35, then the pension you had in the Church of England will be very small by the time you come to retire. So we need some sort of pension arrangements, also arrangements for sick clergy. And also, if one of the married clergy dies, not all of them are married, but some of them are, as you know, then we've got to make sure that we can care for the wife and family if that tragedy happens. So they are real challenges. The Friends of the Ordinaries has been founded by the initiative of Two Knights of Malta, who have been very, very generous with their time. And we've set up this charity. We've raised about £100,000 up to now, but of course, in real terms, it's a very small amount of money. We need some large donations, and we've got some other ideas how we might raise some money.
You mentioned this question of wives and families that many of the ordinariate priests have brought with them. As you know, there are many within the Catholic Church, priests and bishops, who would like to see a change in the celibacy ruling. Do you think your presence here may have an effect on that?
I don't really know whether it will. I mean, what is very clear is that those of us who have been ordained who are married, we're only ordained by grace, by dispensation from the Holy Father for that particular marriage. I mean, God forbid my wife died, I would have to be celibate from that point onwards. I obviously think it is possible to live a priestly life and be married. But I don't think it's for us to engage in that argument, really, which is in some parts of the church. We often get challenged by the priests who have left the church in order to get married. But I think that's something very different. That's comparing apples to oranges, really, because the fact is that those priests who left did actually break their vows of being ordained. But this is a generous pastoral provision for us. We will have to see. But I do, of course, tell people sometimes who are confused about this is that there are many married priests in the Catholic Church, not ex-Anglicans, but in the Eastern Rite. So it's not totally unusual.
What kind of reactions have you had overall from the Catholic community, perhaps people who don't know what the ordinariate is all about?
Well, I think there is a problem of information and understanding. I mean, many people just don't quite understand it. And as I go around speaking to people, as I do quite a bit, I have to try and allay their fears and misunderstandings. I mean, one of the ones which is prevalent among some laity is, why can't you be a proper Catholic? Well, I have to say, we are proper Catholics. There's no such thing as a second-class Catholic. There are different ways of being a Catholic. And this is one which the Holy Father has offered to ex-Anglicans. So there are those misunderstandings. But there's been an incredible welcome for many people, from religious, from parishes, from ordinary Catholic laity, who are excited about this. So on the whole, we've been incredibly welcomed, and we feel just joy about that.
What about your relations with your former Church of England colleagues? You were a pastor for 30 years, weren't you?
More than
Has
that.
Has it been a difficult journey in any way for you in that sense?
Oh, it's been incredibly difficult because for some people, I've been disloyal. I've left them. I've been a hireling, I think. You know, I was their bishop and I've gone off and left them, and they've felt bereft by that. But I felt very strongly that if you're a bishop in the Church of England, as I was, my job was to lead. And as you know, an Eastern shepherd leads from the front, not from behind. And I thought the Holy Father's Apostolic Constitution, Anglorum Chaetibus, was a great gift that we had to respond to. This is something we prayed for years and years and years, corporate union with the Holy See. And therefore, I led people into that. But there have been people who will feel upset by what I've done. There are also a lot of people left in the Church of England, I know, who are watching to see how this develops. Not everybody's a pioneer. Not everybody has the courage to step out into the unknown. I'm not a particularly courageous person, but it does take a bit of guts to do it. So I think there are people there watching because I don't think for Anglo-Catholics things are bright in the Church of England. They're not at all. There is no real future for them. But having said that, you have to become a Catholic because you want to become a Catholic, not because you want to escape problems in the Church of England. So that's why that everybody has to make a personal profession of faith. And that's at the heart of it, really.
You're talking about praying for corporate unity, your desire to see the ecumenical movement going further. And yet, in some sense, there are those who see the ordinate, or at least the way in which it was set up, as almost an obstacle to the current Anglican-Catholic dialogue. What is your response to that?
But it's very clear to me that the ecumenical dialogue between Anglicans and Catholics is now in a different phase. Archic 1 and 2 had the goal of corporate unity. I think Archic 3 does not have that goal anymore. It has the goal of learning and trying to understand from each other. Now, that's fine, and that's it. That's very important. And the goal of corporate unity must always be there because it is our Lord's will. But it seems to me that we've been talking about, for the last few years, about receptive ecumenism, about trying to learn from each other. And I think Anglicanorum Chaetibus is the first time that anybody's tried to actually experiment with that, to try and do it, rather than just simply talking about it. Here's an opportunity to take something of Anglicanism and to be part of the Catholic Church. So I think the Holy Father's cut through a lot of talk and actually done something practical. Now, I agree that not every Anglican will see that, but I don't think it's an obstacle. I hope it will be a bridge. I hope that in the future people will see that this is a way of expressing the Catholic faith in an Anglican manner, as it were, bringing something of the Anglican Church, some of the spiritualities, some of the patrimony, and that they will see that this is a bridge to help further unity, not to hinder it.
The Anglican patrimony, as you say, was the phrase used in Anglicanorum Chaetibus. What exactly does that mean to you, and how do you take something from one tradition, if you like, and move it into another?
Well, I think the first thing is that the Anglican patrimony is us. It's the people. It's the people that we bring. But also, you bring with you things that are very difficult sometimes to define. I mean, somebody said to me once that, you know, it's difficult to define Anglican patrimony. When you see it, you know it. It's something to do with our history. And I think one of the great things is that when you become a Catholic through the Ordinariate, you don't have to deny any of your history or your past, you know. It's if the Holy Father says, bring this into the larger Church and honour it and respect it. So that history, there's a whole tradition of singing, of music. We had, to celebrate our anniversary, we had Evensong in St. James' Spanish Place with beautiful English music, which I don't think had ever been sung in St. James' Spanish Place, a great Catholic church in London, ever before. There is a tradition of spirituality, great writers like Evelyn Underhill, and you've got C.S. Lewis and all those great people. There's the hymnody, the great Anglican hymns that we can bring. And there's something of liturgy. We haven't actually got an Ordinariate Mass yet, although there is a commission going to work on that. But now, as it were, Evensong from the Book of Common Prayer, slightly adapted, is a Catholic liturgy, one that can be said and say, this is the liturgy of the Church. So there's all that. I mean, and I think it's only as the thing develops you'll see that patrimony grow. I think there's also something about the pastoral method may be different, and I think we'll only see that as time works out, but I think that's also important. And there's a sense of mission. Because of the history of the Catholic Church in England and Wales, on the whole it has been priests there have ministered to their congregations. Anglicans tend to have had a view very clearly that as well as the congregation that comes to church, you have a responsibility to the wider community. Now, I think we bring that sense with us, which is about, so mission is not just about the gathered community, but going out there, looking to the people out there who've not heard the good news of Jesus, who need to be gathered in, who need to hear it. And I think that's very important. And I hope that'll be a gift for the Church.
A kind of new evangelisation.
Well, I think that's really important. I mean, if the Ordinariate in the end is not about the new evangelisation, it's a waste of time. Because I think we've got to respond to the Holy Father's initiative and look out and try and draw people in. And I think that's at the very heart of him.
Thank you very much indeed.